I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Mike Klassen joins me again. He is a candidate for City Council for the Nonpartisan Association. Mr. Klassen has been a frequent guest on this program when he was a commentator at the political and urban affairs blog citycaucus.com, which he co-founded. He was also vice chair of the city's planning commission. I've already said I'm voting for Mike. He's a friend and a neighbor. We live in the same area, that around Fraser and King Edward. The other candidate I've already said I'm supporting is RJ Kino, who's running for COPE. Despite these two endorsements, as it were, all candidates are invited to appear on the program between now and the 19th to talk about the issues and the campaign. Candidates are invited to contact me by email at editor@thecommentary.ca, at Planta on Twitter, or at 604-909-8787. We'll talk to Mike Klassen now about why he's running, as well as the pertinent political issues of the day. Mike's own website is at klassenforvancouver.com. The website for the NPA is at npavancouver.ca. Mike's on Twitter, at Mike Klassen is his handle. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Mike Klassen. Good morning, Mr. Klassen.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Welcome.
What do you make of the Mayor Moonbeam ad that we've been seeing on YouTube and the sort?
You know, my first reaction to it was pretty cool, and it's only because I've been online for, I think I've been sort of online on the internet for 20 years now. I think, yeah. I got my first little DOS computer. It's just crazy to think about it. I remember Lynx was a program or something like that. You could actually exchange, you know, basic emails and do some Gopher browsing or something like that. And this was in the early 1990s. And because of because I've been an early adopter and a continuous user of internet, I have a huge amount of respect for that culture and for some of the decorum that we have really tried to push for. And one of the things is not to hide behind something. And, you know, I think that the Mayor Moonbeam piece was, you know, it was a political message, but we don't know who did it. And I believe it's been taken down now. In fact, I think they got in trouble for copyright infringement on the music score or something like that. But, you know, obviously it's been some of the issues in there, you know, we've talked about as the NPA candidates. But I still just think that if you're going to go out there and criticize somebody, you got to sort of state who you are.
And so when people accuse you or your colleague, Daniel Fontaine, of knowing who did it, how do you react to that?
Well, they'd be wrong in that case. I think it sort of it caught a surprise. Daniel is creative and hardworking as is, does not have those kinds of resources and hasn't been the person behind it, he assures me.
Now, you've been involved in campaigns before, but not as a candidate. What's this been like so far?
Oh, I think it's just the usual adrenaline rush, chaos, you know, good days, bad days, you know, all campaigns. And what makes this campaign particularly extraordinary is that, for me, I'm in my sixth month of campaigning. That is... it's personally draining. It's a tough time, you know, in terms of your sacrifice away from family. You know, financially, it's a challenge because you don't really have a lot of time left. I don't know. Can we do things better? Perhaps. I don't think next time. My recommendation to the NPA will be to kind of go back to a little bit more of the late summer candidate selection process that we did in previous elections, instead of going 6 months out, because it really does, it's a commitment. And I think that perhaps for many people who might good candidates, it's a turnoff for them. And to me, it's all about bringing the best people forward to represent the people at City Hall.
Now, you mentioned that it's been a six-month slog for you. You're probably getting criticism, and you probably got it at the outset, that you were running all along, that City Caucus was just a way to keep your name in the press between elections.
You know, I think that we, first of all, just on that alone, everybody brings their own personal reputation and their own name recognition to the table. So if you have been a community activist, as I have been, you're going to bring along with you, hopefully, the people whose lives you've touched through your work and your volunteerism. If you are somebody who has done work in the media, of course you're going to use that to your advantage. I mean, let's talk about our premier, or Ralph Klein, or any number of people who've come from the media ranks into public life. For many people, it's a kind of a natural place to do that. You're touching the public. You've got your finger on the pulse to some extent. But my decision was a decision that I made with my family around the time of the new year. And if you've ever sat down at my kitchen table, you know that my wife is extremely guarded about anybody in our household going out in front of into the public in that way. We're, you know, like all families, we want to have our own privacy respected, and I had to give her some assurance that that this move by me would be something that would still allow us to have our own privacy as a family. And of course, I think anybody would ask that.
Now, actually, I saw you campaigning a couple of weeks ago on Fraser Street. I was on the other side of the street, and you were on the other side talking to voters. I wanted to come across, but there's no cross light where you were actually were. You seem to be enjoying it. What are voters in our neighborhood telling you are their concerns?
Well, when I've been campaigning in this particular our particular neighborhood, I'm not shy about talking about the work that I've done here. I've lived all over the city. I grew up in the Killarney area. I've lived in the West Side. I lived in Douglas Park, where I owned my first home, a townhome with my wife. We moved into Fraser, Fraser Street neighborhood, and when I got here, I immediately said, "Wow, this is where I've always wanted to be." It's just a great neighborhood. It's a very diverse neighborhood. And then when I got involved here as one of the community volunteers, I found common cause with others who really wanted to do good things. So the murals, for example, that we have now painted along some of the storefronts that have really not only brightened the neighborhood, but have gone a long way to prevent graffiti and other antisocial things happening there. That was done, you know, collaboratively, raising some money, you know, putting in applications and working with neighbors on that. Other anti-graffiti work, the Fraser Street banners that are a unique project that you don't see anywhere else in the city, driven by volunteers, money raised by us here through community grants and a very significant donation from the developer of the Century Building at 29th and Fraser. We got them to give us $6,000, and you know, developers are loath to do that. I actually had to ask them three times, and they finally came around and said, "You know what? This is good for us. It's good for us, you know, in terms of, you know, selling our homes here, but it's also good for the neighborhood." And so it was kind of a win-win. And I'm very proud of being able to do that. So those banners now are going to be there for a few years. They kind of signify the history of the neighborhood. We've got a brand new project that's just about to be launched here. I can only take minor amount of credit for some of the initial idea for it, because the heavy lifting was done by a woman by the name of Lily Wong in our neighborhood. Lily is perhaps the most amazing community volunteer I have ever met in my life. And she designed and edited the copy on these plaques that we're going to be putting along lamp standards and other places along Fraser Street. We've seen these Vancouver Story plaques elsewhere.
Yeah.
What distinguishes these ones is, A, first of all, there are going to be, I believe, a total of 8 of them just on Fraser Street. So really talking about the history of our neighborhood going back over a century. And then we're actually including QR codes on them for people who don't know what that's usually something, it's a little funny barcode almost,
yeah,
that you can put on a
blobs, you know.
And people can scan it with their smartphones, and they'll be able to be taken right to a blog post that you'll be able to leave a comment, or you'll be able to tweet it, or, you know, post it on Facebook. So what that did for me was it was taking essentially where our technology is today and allowing people to add to Fraser Street's history, be a part of Fraser Street's history. They can leave their own imprint on that place by saying, I was here and, I met my girlfriend here or something like that. You know, I just, people can do whatever they want. And to me, it was about having that living history was something I thought was worth trying out. And we'll see how it goes, but I think it's going to be launched in the new year.
If there's one candidate who's running, and I've already mentioned his name, who says that if he's elected, he would support some sort of initiative to rename our part of Fraser or some part of Fraser, something Filipino, as a part of Kingsway has been named Little Saigon. If you're elected, would you support that initiative?
Well, you know, I don't want to go against what would probably be a tide of support on something like that. But let me tell you how I feel in general about any kind of government-sanctioned enclave is that I worry that they become exclusive. And I also wonder why. I mean, I asked one question, and I said, you know, we've had the Punjabi market. We've had Chinatown. You know, before the Second World War, we had Japantown. We've had other parts of the city, Little Italy, the Greek area. All of those neighborhoods are evolving neighborhoods, and they were started by the critical mass of small business people, entrepreneurs who went in and said that we're going to try and set up here. And so all of those things were done by people privately. And the idea that we were going to put, you know, a government committee together to try and figure out how to do this seemed to me a precedent that concerned me, because it means that every other multicultural group in the city is going to want to step forward and say, but hey, what about us? And the city is, and where I'm concerned is that it's going to create some friction points. And so what happened with the Vietnamese one is we're now hearing people very concerned about it. And, you know, what do you do? I mean, there's a lot of passions on all sides of it. And I think you want to do the right thing. And maybe that came from a very good place, but it does open a can of worms. As far as the Filipino one goes, the Filipino community, as I've recognized in my writing in the past, have become a force to reckon with in Metro Vancouver, and especially politically. I don't think it was wrong when I wrote, the Filipino culture here is one that is very familiar with democracy. And so when they came here, they got into the political scene here. And that's fantastic because, with declining voter turnout, it's always great to have somebody to shore up, that support. And so they're using their strength in numbers and their interest in politics to become a very important part of the Vancouver of today.
Now, speaking of government-sanctioned enclaves, what about that in front of the art gallery, Occupy Vancouver? What's the latest on that? Are they going in today, Thursday, the 10th of November?
I don't know what's going on. I do know that it's a mess. And I was actually at Occupy Vancouver last night. I went down, spent about an hour down there just talking to people. I just wandered in off-site. I probably looked a little out of place. I was in my Sunday best. I had a tie on and shiny shoes. And, of course, it's quite muddy and rough-looking down there. You've got all kind of plywood and pallets, and it's like a shanty town, the way it's been set up to some extent. And then, of course, there's a very sophisticated operation. They've got the electricity down there from the city, and as a result, they've got, kind of wireless hubs and internet and amplified systems and the kitchen set up and all sorts of little stations that are all powered, and it's like a little town that they've created there. But I went and talked to the people, and I when you go and talk to people one-on-one there, they're extremely earnest. I talked to another fellow who is who talked to me about the camp, and you know, he was not a fire-breathing radical at all. He was a very nice and thoughtful man. He even told me he was going to vote for me, and I thought that was very nice. And but you know, I have said all along that occupying public space with the encampment, setting up permanent structures, is something that I cannot support. I want people to be able to have their say. I want people to protest. I think, you know, I was just, when I was standing there and looking around, one of the things that crossed my mind is, as we've built our city, we've not been very successful at creating good public squares. And there have been others who have written about this and talked about this, the Public Space Network, for example. And that's why I kind of went out on a bit of a branch after the Olympics and said that Robson Square needed to be kind of rethunk. Mm-hmm. And so I have been, you know, really kind of pondering that one, how could we make that work in terms of a public square. And the reason, and of course the front lawn, used to be grass, there's mm-hmm. been bark mulch for a couple of years. The front of the art gallery is a bit of a difficult space, but it is really, in many people's minds, the center of our metropolitan area. And so for them to take that space away from everybody else and just kind of keep it to themselves is a problem, and that's why I would like to see the tents and permanent structures go. However, it would be great to have a public square where people can both celebrate and protest to their heart's content.
Now, if your party had been the government at Cambion 12, would they not have been there in the first place?
Well, we know now, because a memo was released, that the city always intended not to allow the permanent structures to be erected. We saw there was an email released. Charles Godier, who from the Downtown Business Improvement Association, was in discussions with the large events team that the city set up after the June riot, the Stanley Cup riot. And this large events team, and you know, we've heard now that they spent, about $350,000 just on policing on that first day, October 15th. They had just a massive force down there. There's no question in my mind that they could have prevented permanent structures from being set up. That's when it should have happened. It appears now that the city staff and the police were once again overruled by the mayor's office. And so this is why I think Gregor is in deep trouble politically, because he is the person who is wearing what happened at the tent city, the encampment, is his. And I'm actually kind of mystified. I have theories as to why Gregor allowed this to happen, but I'm not entirely sure what he was thinking, why he thought that this would be fine. I don't know if your listeners know, but in the first couple of days, he made comments like protest or whatever he called it at the time can stay as long as it wants, as long as it's peaceful. The city of Vancouver were tweeting out the very night of the first one, "Don't worry, we're not getting rid of you. You're free to stay." Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there was a clear indication that this was approved by the city, and now they've created a big problem. Now they're taking this into the courts. They're tying up court time, tying up the time of a judge on the injunction. It's a mess.
Mike, I appreciate your time today. You're doubtless busy campaigning and the sort. I'm going to go out and vote for you, and am encouraging others to do so. Good luck with the rest of the campaign.
Joe, it's been a pleasure talking to you these last couple of years, and I hope that we can continue these if I'm elected as a city councillor.
Absolutely. At Mike Klassen is his Twitter handle. KlassenForVancouver.com is the website. NPAVancouver.ca is the party's website. Mike Klassen, a candidate for city council for the NPA, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.